Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the Global Health Forum on Blog Talk Radio. This show is a public service of People to People, a not-for-profit 501c3 registered Ethiopian diaspora healthcare organization. I am your host, Dr. Tensai Loretta. Tonight, we are honored to have Dr. Patricia Gordon and Dr. Jennifer Lang as our distinguished guests to discuss their work to prevent cervical cancer in developing countries across the globe. Cervical cancer is a leading cause of cancer death for women worldwide. Globally, over 500,000 women acquire cervical cancer, and more than 300,000 die from the disease each year. The majority of new cases are in developing countries that lack adequate screening and treatment programs for precancerous lesions. Once invasive cancer develops, the treatment involves radical surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation, which is prohibitively expensive in many developing countries. Cervical cancer is completely preventable by the detection of precancerous cells and treatment to prevent progression to cancer. Dr. Patricia Gordon is the founder of a nonprofit organization called Cure Cervical Cancer, which is dedicated to training local healthcare professionals to screen and treat women with precancerous cervical lesions. The organization has established 25 sustainable clinics in Guatemala, Haiti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Vietnam. Dr. Gordon graduated from Harvard University and UCLA School of Medicine. She completed her internship at Cedars-Sinai Hospital. She worked as a radiation oncologist in Beverly Hills for 28 years before retiring in 2014 to lead the Cure Cervical Cancer Organization. Dr. Jennifer Lang is the medical director of Cure Cervical Cancer and vice chair of the board. She received her medical education at Albert Einstein College of Medicine and completed her residency training in obstetrics and gynecology at St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital Center of Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. She completed her fellowship in gynecologic oncology at UCLA and Cedars-Sinai Medical Centers. She worked as a gynecologic oncologist in private practice for 5 years before deciding to take a sabbatical to focus on the Cure Cervical Cancer mission. So Dr. Gordon, Dr. Lang, welcome to the show, and we want to thank you so much for joining us as our guest.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So I thought we could start with, if you could both tell us a little bit about how you first became interested in tackling this important public health problem, and especially how you became interested in it in developing countries.
Okay, I think I'll start. I'm Patricia Gordon, and I was a practicing oncologist for 27 years locally here in Los Angeles. And I was very aware of the global epidemic of cervical cancer and how women were dying of cervical cancer even more than maternal mortality in certain resource-poor countries. I initially went to Dakar, Senegal about 3 years ago to do cervical cancer screening. And very naively, I thought that, if we find women that have precancerous lesions on the cervix, we'll just refer them to local community clinics for cryotherapy. And I found that there was almost no resources at all for these women who tested positive for precancerous lesions. So as I left Senegal, I promised myself that I would devote my career to help eradicating this entirely preventable disease.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Lang. From my perspective, as a gynecologic oncologist training in the United States, you know, cervical cancer is certainly part of the disease spectrum that we see here. However, it is far, far less prevalent in the United States than it is globally. I just felt that I could devote my entire career working here in the United States treating individual patients and not have nearly the fraction of the impact that one can have tackling this disease globally. The numbers of women affected by this disease are just staggering, and the truth is that it really is preventable, and how many cancers can we really say that about? So I decided to devote the remainder of my career as well to tackling this issue and just trying to make a dent in this tragic situation.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for explaining that. And for our non-medical audience, can you explain what causes cervical cancer and how it can be prevented?
Dr. Lang?
Sure. So cervical cancer is almost entirely due to the human papilloma virus, and I'll just refer to it as the HPV virus. This is a sexually transmitted virus that is ubiquitous. It's really found everywhere. There are many different strains of this virus, and certain high-risk strains, if they remain on the cervix for a long enough period of time, they can develop into cervical cancer. So we know what causes it, the virus, and we have a couple of tools in our prevention kit. One tool that's gotten a lot of press is the human papillomavirus vaccine, the HPV vaccine. We have a couple vaccines on the market right now, and if boys and girls are immunized or vaccinated against the HPV virus before they are exposed, they are virtually guaranteed of not developing cervical cancer. Or in the case of boys, there are certain cancers of the head and neck, also penile and anal cancers that can be associated with HPV. So vaccination is a very important part of the prevention strategy, but unfortunately it only works in those people that are not or have not been exposed to the virus yet. So then we're left with an enormous group in part of the population that has been exposed to the virus, and they have, we know, about a 10-year window from time of exposure until the earliest opportunity for invasive cancer to develop. And so intervention during that 10-year window can very effectively prevent the progression to cervical cancer. And in the case of our organization, the method that we use to prevent is we screen with something called visual inspection with acetic acid, and then we treat positive precancerous cells with a procedure called cryotherapy, which is essentially just freezing the precancerous cells off of the cervix.
I see. Okay. And you mentioned the HPV vaccine. So is that an expensive vaccine? And I think in the U.S. that's routinely offered to for groups of a certain age, both for women and men of a certain age. Is that something that's expensive and available in developing countries?
You're absolutely right. It is an expensive vaccine. However, the companies that manufacture it are making an effort to provide the vaccine at reduced prices for countries that are in need. Here in the United States, the CDC recommends that universal vaccination of boys and girls between the ages of 9 and 26. And certain countries around the world are really making it a priority to try to do mass vaccination efforts, working in conjunction with nonprofits, with industry, to try to bring costs down and get these vaccines out to the people.
The problem, unfortunately, is that even in the United States, as a developed country, only 30% of all girls, and even less percentage in boys, are even vaccinated. So it's an enormous leap of faith to even think of resource-poor countries offering that, in our lifetime. And of course, anyone who's ever had sex before is not really actually a candidate for the vaccine. So, sexually active, I should say. But that so we don't concentrate at all on vaccines. That's not what we do at all.
In fact,
the technique that Cure Cervical Cancer, which is the nonprofit that both Dr. Lang and I work arduously with and daily, and is devoted to the process called see and treat. You see it with vinegar. Dr. Lang mentioned a visualization with acetic acid. It's just plain old vinegar. And you spray vinegar on the cervix. So, for instance, tomorrow I am going to Ethiopia with a group of 10 medical professionals to St. Paul's Hospital, the Ministry of Health Hospital, and we are going to teach 24 local doctors and nurses from around the region how to perform this very simple technique of spraying vinegar on the cervix and visualizing if there's any precancerous changes. And it's quite easy to see. And we expect about a 10-12% positivity rate. And that's the answer to the technique that we use to detect precancerous lesions. What I was so saddened by when I went to Senegal 3 years ago was that there was nobody that had the cryotherapy gun, which is not a very sophisticated piece of machinery, and no one had the CO2 tank to be able to treat those lesions on the cervix that turned white with the vinegar. So it became my goal in life and Dr. Jennifer's to provide not just the training for how to detect the pre-cervical cancer lesions, but also the treatment. So we go in, like I'm doing tomorrow, with our team, teach the local healthcare providers how to screen and how to treat with cryotherapy, which is a freezing gun, leave all the equipment, and establish permanent sustainable clinics.
Wonderful. Okay, and you mentioned the use of the vinegar. Now, can you, for the non-medical professional, can you describe how that's different from a country like the U.S. and clearly the cost would be much reduced with this method.
Dr. Lang?
Sure, I'm happy to address that. We've all heard of the Pap smear, and that is a test that looks at the cells from the cervix and has been absolutely instrumental in lowering deaths from cervical cancer in developed countries. So this is a procedure where women go into a gynecologist or, you know, family medicine provider. They have a speculum exam. Some cells are taken off of the cervix. They are then sent to a laboratory where a specialized technician called a cytologist or a pathologist will need to look at the slides and determine whether there are abnormal cells. If they find abnormal cells, the patient is contacted and has to return to a clinic for a second procedure called a colposcopy, which is essentially just a magnifying glass to look closer at the cervix, and biopsies are taken. And those biopsies then have to be sent back to the lab and evaluated and read by a pathologist. And then the woman needs to be contacted a second time with those results. And if she needs treatment, then the treatment is recommended. So as you can see, this is a multi-step process that is quite expensive and very resource intensive. So if you look at many resource-poor countries, there simply are not the pathologists available or cytologists to do this. There are not the laboratories that can handle the kind of quantities of specimens that would need to be read for screening purposes. So it's really just unrealistic, impossible essentially, to use the pap smear in resource-poor settings. So in lieu of the pap smear, a simplified, consolidated technique that is as effective, if not more effective, and that's the amazing thing, the sensitivity rate for this treatment, the see and treat method, or visualization with acetic acid, is better than with a pap smear. So professionals can be trained to spray the vinegar on, identify precancerous changes just by shining light and with the naked eye. So you don't require any of these fancy equipments, you don't require a laboratory analysis, and the patient can receive her results right then and there and can be counseled and offered treatment right then and there. So there's no problem with contacting people by telephone, which, as we all know, that can be its own challenge in resource-poor settings, or people who may have traveled for hours on foot to a clinic to have the screening done, not being able to return if they had an abnormal test. So we try to make it as consolidated, as simplified, but maintaining the very, very high sensitivity and specificity rates that allow us to really confidently say that we are identifying these precancerous changes and treating them when it's applicable.
You see, we call this the see and treat method because we can see it within 60 seconds if the woman has precancerous lesions and treat it within 12 minutes. So you see the patient and you treat the patient if necessary, and the whole process takes no longer than 15 minutes.
That's remarkable, man.
It is exactly what the World Health Organization has deemed the gold standard for cervical cancer screening and prevention in resource-poor countries. And that's why Cure Cervical Cancer is so actively involved in so many countries that are epidemic with this disease that is pervasive, lethal, and entirely preventable.
And that is remarkable that such a, you know, it's a low technology, inexpensive method, but that it has such a high sensitivity, and that's just tremendous.
It's simple and elegant.
That's right. Okay. And about the, so thank you for explaining that. And about the treatment, so you mentioned the freezing or the cryotherapy. Is that the same in the U.S. and developing countries, the treatment, and can you tell us how effective that treatment is?
Go ahead, Jen.
Okay, I can address that. So we do use cryotherapy in America. It somewhat fell out of favor for, you know, the past couple decades, I would say, because people were moving more towards what we call in the medical field an excisional biopsy. That's where you're actually cutting away part of the cervix. We do that with a procedure called a LEEP, L-E-E-P. And we were doing that in lieu of cryotherapy for many years, partly because when you cut the cervix away, you then have a tissue specimen that you can send to a lab and that can confirm, you know, 100% the diagnosis, and you can see that your, what we call the margins are clear of these precancerous cells. So there are definitely some benefits to LEEP, and LEEP is obviously still practiced. However, as we're performing more and more LEEPs, we also started gathering some data on outcomes. And particularly of concern were some pregnancy outcomes, where we did find that there was a statistically significant increase in rates of preterm labor, preterm birth in women who had, you know, one or more LEEPs. Now, it's a very small increase, but it's not zero. And so we are now looking again at cryotherapy as a way to treat these lesions very, very effectively. You don't have a piece of tissue that you can send to a laboratory after, because it is not excisional. It is what's called ablational. or ablative. And however, it is very effective, and it does not have any association with poor pregnancy outcomes or any kind of poor outcomes in the future. It's incredibly safe. It's painless. It doesn't, if you know, provided properly, it does not require anesthesia as a LEAP does, and there's no risk of bleeding or serious bleeding. Whereas with a LEAP procedure, you know, people can really hemorrhage. So we are returning to cryotherapy in America. But internationally, cryotherapy really is the gold standard for treating these precancerous lesions because of its safety, efficacy, and lack of serious side effects.
I see. And in terms of cost, I think... Is it relatively expensive for developing countries?
It's massively less expensive to do C with vinegar and treat with cryotherapy than to perform a pap smear, send it to a cytologist. That in itself could be several hundred dollars. And then it returns a positive result. Then you have to have a biopsy, which could be thousands of dollars, and a LEAP procedure, which, again, could be, you know, $1,000. So it's not happening. It's not reasonable to think that resource-poor countries can do that. Almost always, all of the women that we examine on our various programs all over the world, this is their first gynecological exam. And the reason that they come to the clinics en masse is that they know that their mothers, their sisters, died from bleeding from the vagina. I'm not sure that they know that it's cervical cancer, but they understand why they're coming, that this is to prevent that epidemic that they see around their towns and their cities. And this very beautiful technique that is just, as I said, less than 15 minutes is so powerful.
And I just want to add another incredible benefit of this is that it really doesn't even require electricity. You know, so we can go to regions where there are hospitals or clinics that don't have reliable generators or the electricity goes out. You can do this procedure with a flashlight, with a headlamp. We bring a light source that's battery powered as well. And then the cryotherapy doesn't require electricity either. It's just a carbon dioxide gas, that a compressed gas that is shot through this cryotherapy gun that does the freezing. So you can take this technology into very remote areas that don't have resources, even like electricity, and it can be enormously effective.
And this is why we created the nonprofit Cure Cervical Cancer, one word, Cure Cervical Cancer, which can be found on the internet, curecervicalcancer.org or curecervicalcancer.com.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I have seen the website, and actually it's a very nice depiction of the work you do in the video, and it really shows the tremendous work that you've been doing. Moving on to that, can you tell us about the work of how you went about establishing these clinics? 25 different clinics in various different countries. If you could explain how you went about doing that.
That's Dr. Lang. Would you like to talk about our ground partners?
Sure. So we approach this as we look at the world, and we see where cervical rates are highest, and it tends to be in areas that are the most poor, the most resource strapped, where there's been either political instability or some kind of problems with developing healthcare infrastructure. So essentially, where screening programs have not been effectively implemented, and we target those areas as, you know, where we want to put our efforts. And then within those areas, we identify ground partners. And our ground partners can be ministries of health. They can be other nonprofit organizations, either local nonprofit or international nonprofits, who are working with communities similar to those that we would like to approach. And we look for an effective partnership because we know that we can't arrive in an area that we've never been to, that we have no, you know, in-depth real understanding of how that community functions and effectively do our work. We need to work with people who are already there. And we look for local healthcare providers, whether they be physicians, nurses, midwives, or community health workers, who understand the scope of the problem of cervical cancer and are truly motivated to learn the see and treat technique and to bring these skills into their communities to begin providing these services for the women in their communities. And the reason that it's so important to have healthcare professionals that are motivated in this way is that we really want these clinics to be sustainable and ongoing. We would consider it a failure, really, if we arrived in a community, did a clinic, screened, you know, even 1,000 women and left, and that screening did not continue to take place. So the real focus of our clinic is sustainability, and we need these effective ground partners who are committed to that sustainability to make that work.
And to that end, I'm very proud to say that Cure Cervical Cancer has now screened and treated 23,000 women all over the world, and we're just getting started.
Wow, that's tremendous. When did the work actually start?
Well, 3 years ago, I started doing this in Senegal, but we don't count that. The first clinic was about 2.5 years ago in Idar, Ethiopia, where we have they're going strong, and they report into us every month. And I'm actually going to visit Mekelle, Ethiopia, on a Wednesday.
Wow. So just in 3 years, 23,000 women, that is just tremendous. So these clinics are, the ones you've established, they're open throughout the year, then after even, I mean,
they're
even
open.
When...
Yes, they're open daily. Some clinics are open, say, you know, afternoons, or some clinics might be open, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and not on Thursday and Friday. But it's required in advance that we identify the ground partners that are willing to report back to us on a monthly basis the number of women that they screened and the number of women that they treated with cryotherapy. That's how we're able to keep our statistics and data.
It's also how we're able to troubleshoot problems, you know, identify if there are areas that, you know, that need additional supplies or resources. We really try to maintain close contact with all of our clinics. And plus, we're building a magnificent group of friends around the world, you know, and colleagues. We've met doctors from all of these countries that, you know, have just become such close friends to us.
That's wonderful. And so these clinics, they're both in, you know, major urban areas as well as rural areas?
Yes, they are. And we have clinics in major hospitals, and we have clinics in community hospitals. We call it the hub and spoke model. For instance, in Vietnam, in North Vietnam, in Quang Ninh province, there is the major reproductive center, so that would be our hub, and we have set up 4 other clinics in community centers an hour away from the main hospital hub.
I see.
And we're about to go to Ethiopia tomorrow to do a hub and spoke model there. The hub will be St. Paul's major Ministry of Health Hospital, And the Spoke Community Clinics, there are three different clinics that are coming to St. Paul's for the educational, didactic lecture, and then the entire week of learning how to screen and treat the women with cryotherapy. And we anticipate seeing and at least 700 women next week.
Wow. Okay. That is wonderful. Okay, so we'll definitely continue our discussion. We reached the halfway mark. I just wanted to remind our listeners, you're listening to Global Health Forum, brought to you by People to People. Today we're honored to have Dr. Patricia Gordon and Dr. Jennifer Lang of Cure Cervical Cancer as our guests, discussing their work to prevent and treat cervical cancer in developing countries. So we'd like to invite the audience, any members with questions, please call in. The number is 646-595-4742, and you can press 1 to speak to ask questions. So thank you. Please call in with any questions. All right. So while we wait for questions, I did have a few questions. It's just fascinating hearing the work you do. One of the big problems in developing countries is, you know, the shortage of physicians. And we know that there's, you know, in many areas the physician to per capita ratio is very, you know, tremendous in terms of one physician to the number of people that they treat. Is this the technique that you described, the see and treat, is that something that is that required for physicians to do, or
no,
other not?
Okay. Not at all. We've trained about 250 healthcare providers, and the vast majority are nurses and midwives.
Nurses and midwives, okay, so, that are trained, okay. Okay, great.
This is a technique that could be trained even without an RN degree to community health workers. It does not require a very complex knowledge beyond how to perform a basic gynecological exam and perform the treatment.
I see. Okay. Excellent. Thank you. And I think we do have, one caller on the line, area code 919, if they're still on the line.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my phone call. This has been a really interesting topic. Thank you for your guest. I have a couple questions. One, you mentioned that the women did come knowing that, you know, they had sisters and mothers that died of these diseases. But overall, how I know there's in many of these countries there's some cultural taboos against, you know, gynecological issues. Have you come across them, and like how have you been able to address them?
That's a very interesting problem that we do face, particularly in our clinics in the Maasai Mara, where women have been, I'm going to use the politically correct word, cut. And they're quite hesitant to have this process because of their past. So it can take quite a bit of counseling, and as much as 30-40 minutes I've spent, you know, trying to communicate why this exam is important. And I'm generally fairly convincing, but not always.
Wow. Okay. And then are the healthcare workers that you've mentioned that are training, are they also like taught how to address this issue? Even for the healthcare workers to do this exam, have you had any issues with that?
Not really. The healthcare workers understand the epidemic nature of what we're trying to prevent, and they're all very excited about learning the procedure and continuing the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to add to that, if I may, this is Dr. Lang. This is another enormous benefit of this service being provided by local healthcare professionals, that you know, they're communicating with their own community members, and so they really understand far better than we do the subtleties and nuances of patients' fears, concerns, histories, all of that.
Okay, great. And then one other question that I thought of was when you said you're going on this trip to Ethiopia and you'll be able to leave the equipment there, are the equipment donated by the companies or medical schools or anything like that? How do you get your equipment that you donate?
Well, Actually, I'm very happy you asked that question. Dr. Lang and I spend a great deal of our time raising money locally and through organizations and foundations. And none of the equipment is donated. Perhaps we're able to buy it at a greatly reduced price because of our relationships. But this organization is funded by people that, like you, who find this mission that speaks to your soul and that is so effective at such a low cost. I think we once did an analysis that it costs us $30 to save a person's life. So, so we have local foundations, international foundations that fund us, but mostly it's just people like you that will go to curecervicalcancer.org and donate to the organization.
Thank you very much for your work.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Okay, thanks to our caller for your excellent questions. We have another caller on the line, area code 703.
Yes, I also really like to thank both guests for the amazing work they're doing. And to dedicate their career to the care of women in developing countries is just phenomenal. And their work is very impactful, and the fact that it's low-tech and relatively easily scalable is exciting. Two brief questions. The one is you've alluded to it earlier that it is considered a gold standard, but just kind of wanted to know what the chances of a false positive test is and whether that's even relevant. Are there any complications you expect with cryotherapy? That's the one part. On the other part, I'm sure every now and then you run into cases which are more advanced. So do you have any mechanism in place to treat or refer such cases?
I can address those questions. This is Dr. Lang. Thank you. Those are both absolutely excellent questions. And to address the first one, what is the false positive rate? Hard to quote an exact number on that since we're not taking biopsies. So, you know, there is really not a way to quantify that. However, we do understand that a certain percentage of over-treatment will occur, and we actually do not consider that a problem or a drawback. And the reason we don't is because the procedure is so safe and painless and not associated with serious adverse outcomes. So someone who's had cryotherapy performed on them is not going to have a pregnancy complication in the future because of that. So we would much rather, if women are coming for one screening gynecological exam in their lifetimes, you know, and that may be in fact the case, that they reach a clinic like ours once in their life, we would rather that the providers there err slightly on the side of over-treatment than under-treatment. And we know that, statistically, we know that if a woman arrives at a See and Treat center one time in her life, her lifetime risk of dying from cervical cancer goes down by 30%. And if she can come back to a See and Treat clinic 5 years later, her lifetime risk of dying from cervical cancer will drop by 60%. So these, you know, very short, spaced out, isolated encounters can have dramatic effects. And then the second question, oh my goodness, could you remind me again? What was it?
The other question was the other end of the spectrum that you evaluate find advanced cases.
This is the most heartbreaking aspect of our work, truly heartbreaking, and especially for me as for both of us. Me as a gynecologic oncologist, I'm a surgeon, and so I know what's required for advanced disease up to a certain stage. That's a radical hysterectomy, and that procedure can really safely be performed in very few places. You know, you need to have really sophisticated, trained surgeons who are capable of doing lymph node dissections, of working in a very delicate part of the body where there can be many complications with involving the urinary tract and fistulas and all of this, not to mention hemorrhage. So you would need a sophisticated operating room with a blood bank and all of that, and that rarely happens. And you can really only operate on invasive cases up to a point beyond which they need chemotherapy and radiation. And Dr. Gordon, maybe as a radiation oncologist, you could address that end of the spectrum.
In all of my travels with the 27 clinics that we have throughout Guatemala, Haiti, Vietnam, Ethiopia, and Kenya, I've yet to see a radiation machine that actually delivers the proper dose. In fact, I haven't really seen a real linear accelerator in any of those countries. And the one or two places that I go, I'm always interested in going in and seeing what they have in terms of radiation. It's truly out of date and not delivering the dose that they say they would deliver. And it's only really affecting far, far, far less than 1% of the population. It's only the very wealthy that could even imagine to go to the one radiation facility in all of, say, Senegal, or the two facilities in all of Ethiopia. It's just unrealistic to imagine that that's going to happen.
So when we do encounter these cases, of course we will provide referrals to these centers, but we know the reality is that it is unlikely that these women will make it there. And even if they were to make it there, it's unlikely that they would receive the treatment that they need. And that, if anything, I mean, yes, it's very difficult, but it motivates us even further to focus on this preventative aspect, because prevention really is the only thing that's going to be effective in these scenarios. I hope that answered your question.
Oh, yes, thank you very much.
Thank you for those excellent questions to our caller. I had another question for myself. I was wondering, with the HIV epidemic that we saw in many developing countries throughout the world, is cervical cancer seen at a higher incidence in areas with a high prevalence of HIV?
Yes. In fact, we're starting to take data on all patients who come into the clinic who are HIV positive, and we're finding a statistically higher number of women who are HIV positive who are also positive with the vinegar test and require the cryotherapy. In certain places, in Kenya, for example, about 70% of all patients who are HIV positive will also be vinegar positive and need the treatment. So we take special care to ask that question before they enter the clinics. They go hand in hand. Cervical cancer, HIV, death from cervical cancer from the HIV and HPV.
And if I may just explain why that is, HPV is a virus, and HIV, as we know, it affects the immune system. So essentially, somebody who has HIV is unable to fight off the HPV virus. So that virus remains on the cervix longer, and the longer the virus remains there, the greater the chance of the virus incorporating itself into the cells and starting this oncogenic transformation to cancer. So cervical cancer is, in fact, considered an AIDS-defining illness, and rates are remarkably high amongst patients with HIV and AIDS.
Okay, thank you. And so you mentioned the work you've been doing over the past 3 years. Can you tell us what are some of the major challenges that you've encountered in your work?
We have definitely encountered some challenges, Each clinic is required to have a 50-kilogram non-siphon, it's actually a 25-kilogram non-siphon CO2 tank. They stand 5 feet 6 inches. And getting those CO2 tanks to the clinic, and then they only have 30 uses, so we have to figure out how they're going to get refilled all over the world on a routine basis. Some of our countries are in Haiti. Haiti, for instance, has to go all the way to the Dominican Republic to get their CO2 tanks refilled. Another challenge is that we train the local healthcare nurses and midwives, and sometimes they leave their position as a certified cure cervical cancer certified cryotherapist, and leave and take another job. So there we have a clinic that, you know, has lost its nurse or two. So those are some of the bigger challenges that we've had to face.
Let me see. Also, you said midwives and nurses, in addition to being able to do the see and treat, they're also able to perform the cryotherapy?
Yeah, the treat part is the cryotherapy. The see part is using the vinegar to see the changes on the cervix. And the treat part is the freezing off of those changes with the cryotherapy gun and the CO2 tank.
I see. So it's a training that you provide when you go to these clinics.
Absolutely, and in fact, it's the most gratifying. One of the most gratifying parts of being involved with Cure Cervical Cancer is that we have been able to train at least 250 local midwives, doctors, and mainly nurses or healthcare professionals in this technique of seeing and treating with cryotherapy.
Okay. 250, wow, that's a tremendous number.
And by the end of next week, there will be 250 plus the 24 that we will be training in Addis Ababa.
Okay. How often do you travel abroad to do this?
We are on mission about 8 times, or on setting up a program or revisiting a clinic area we have already established in, about 8 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
That is challenging. But sometimes, you know, we divide and conquer. It doesn't mean that I'm on all 8 missions or Dr. Jennifer Lang is on all 8 missions. We divide it up.
I see. And when you go for about a week at a time? Or?
Well, sometimes we go for 2 weeks.
2 weeks, okay.
And sometimes we go for a week. It depends. Usually never less than 8 days.
8 days. And then in that time, you said hundreds of women will travel to come for screening?
Yes, anywhere from 500 to 1,200 we've seen in a week. The reason that it's so important to see so many women is to train the healthcare professionals. So many times other well-intentioned groups will go, and unfortunately there'll only be, say, 60 women to train on. What we do is we have one large clinic room with, say, 6 stations, 6 examination beds, all separated by screens, so that, and we have a very small trainer to trainee ratio. So, for instance, we're bringing 10 people with us to Ethiopia, and 7 of them are trained to teach cryotherapy and the see and treat method. And we only have 24 in the audience to learn. And so that's the way we do it. That's our model. Mm-hmm. We don't want to have more than one trainer to 3 trainee ratio, because we don't think that the trainee then feels that they have the skill to go forward after we leave the region and be successful. So with our model of this low ratio of trainee to trainer, and with the huge volumes of patients in all seen in one room, so that if somebody finds an equivocal finding, is this one positive or is this one negative, other trainees can come and take a look, and we can all sort of decide together how we should proceed. We could troubleshoot together in one large room so that the trainees truly do master the technique by the end of the week. And we have a test that we give that's written, and then a graduation ceremony at the end of the week.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. So, and you also mentioned, both Dr. Gordon and Dr. Lang, you mentioned having ground partners at the Ministry of Health. Do you find, because we saw with the HIV epidemic that when it became a priority, you know, they were able to mobilize resources to really attack that. Do you see that same model with cervical cancer that is being made a priority by, you know, the Ministry of Health, other organizations?
I think it's gaining ground in terms of awareness and becoming more of a priority. I mean, unfortunately, the frank truth is that women's health and women's bodies often fall to the bottom of the priority list. You know, I hate to say it, but it just tends to be the case. And then it makes sense. I mean, people are so focused on crises and imminent death that a screening program for, you know, a virus that could affect somebody in 5 or 10 years might fall down the priority list. However, I think increasingly governments, ministries of health, nonprofits are understanding that really, an ounce of prevention really is worth a pound of cure, because if you can prevent these women from developing invasive cancer, then, you know, you can save enormous resources not having to deal with women coming in with advanced disease, hemorrhaging, in horrible pain, requiring blood transfusions, extensive palliative care. So it really does make sense on every level to focus on prevention, and I think we are finding that our partners are recognizing that.
And if I might add, for every woman's life that we save the lives of their children. Child mortality greatly increases when they don't have a mother.
So this kind of preventative service can appeal to groups that are interested in child health and livelihood, as well as women's health, as well as communities, community development, businesses. You know, all of these things. It's really important to have healthy, vibrant women in the community.
Well said.
Thank you.
Well said. Yes. Thank you. And do you see, so just as, you know, so for here, so in the U.S., the pap smear is, recommended for, you know, all sexually active women on an annual basis. Do you see that, like, for example, in developing countries like Ethiopia, do you see this, you know, this screening method, at least using the acetic acid, is that something that, you know, general practitioners, you know, will implement in the future, make it universal screening for women in the age groups?
That's certainly our goal. It's a lofty one, but we certainly hope that that happens through this hub and spoke model that I spoke of previously. That this would become routine screening. And remember, our clinics all over the world are open. So we tell people that have screened negative to return back to the clinic. Either in a year or two, and certainly if they have screened positive and received cryotherapy, we want to see them back in 6 months if they're HIV positive, and we want to see them back in a year if they're HIV negative but received cryotherapy. And they do come back.
Yeah, that's been one of the benefits now of being in operation for 2 full years, because that the Mekelle Ethiopia trip, our first trip was March of 2013. So we've just hit that 2-year mark, and when we're now seeing patients returning, and that's wonderful. You know, nothing speaks more to a successful clinic than a patient that, one, hasn't been scared away. You know, they want to come back. They've had a positive experience, and I expect that we will begin to see cervical cancer rates, you know, being impacted by these services as more and more women are screened in the communities.
That's wonderful. Thank you. And, I mean, you've done just tremendous work in just a short period of time of 3 years. I wanted to ask, in the next few years, what are your goals? Do you see, expanding the clinics already existing, building more clinics? What are your goals?
Again, using this hub major hospital center and community clinics surrounding it is how we anticipate this year growing. In fact, we have 27 clinics now. By the end of next week, there will be 31, and by the end of the year, we calculate 61. Again, by returning to places that we are already have a presence in and just creating more clinics, say, an hour or 2-hour drive away from the hub clinic. We're establishing 11 new clinics in Haiti this year, 8 new clinics in Kenya this year, 2 more clinics in Vietnam, and an educational series of lectures throughout China.
Mm-hmm. And awesome. I was just going to add, the major goal, the long, the dream, of course, is that these services really do penetrate to all communities in need. And whether we do that through our organization or through, most likely that will happen through partnership with other organizations, but just spreading this availability so that women in resource poor settings have the same access to preventative gynecologic services as women in developed countries. That's our ultimate goal.
I agree.
Excellent. Thank you. And then the final question I have, I don't think we have any, you see there's no other callers. The final question is, so for all the people, members of P2P listening, how can they contribute to this effort? I think you mentioned the website, www.curecervicalcancer.org or .com, and certainly we will, I would highly recommend for our listeners to view it's a tremendous website that demonstrates their work. Is there any other ways that we can contribute to your tremendous work?
Yes. In fact, if there are listeners out there that are nurses or doctors who would like to join us on a mission and volunteer their time, we're always looking for new people to come along in hopes that a new nurse or a new doctor will want to join us 1 or 2 times a year and really learn the procedure so that they're able to help teach it in our low trainer-to-trainee ratio.
I just wanted to add, there's also an enormously gratifying opportunity for a clinic dedication. And this is truly something special. A donor can essentially gift the funds that support one of these ongoing sustainable clinics. And because we keep such close track and of the data coming into this clinic, and there really isn't a better way if you want to know that your gift is going directly to services, we're able to track to the patient, the number of women that are seen and receive treatment at these various clinics. So there is the opportunity to dedicate a clinic to the memory of, a family member or a loved one, and I think that's important to point out.
And a permanent placard, which is quite beautiful and quite large, that says the name of the donor or whatever the donor would like to say goes on the wall of the clinic. All 27 of our clinics have been donated by donors who wish to commemorate some loved one, and they receive pictures of the sign that's hung at the clinic with the local healthcare workers that are working in those clinics, and they receive pictures upgoing and whenever we revisit them, and it's really turned out to be quite wonderful. Many of our donors have donated more than one clinic.
And then furthermore, I just want to encourage people who might have been interested at listening to this discussion to go on our website and follow our blogs and share the blogs on Facebook or to your network of friends, because increasing awareness of this method of cervical cancer as an epidemic, that could be the difference between, you know, a woman deciding to go see one of these clinics and have an exam done. That could save a life. So just everything that people can do to learn more about cervical cancer, educate their friends, talk about HPV and ways that we can work to prevent it and cervical cancer deaths, all of that is enormously helpful.
And I have two more points. The cost of donating a community clinic that is sustainable and ongoing and treats thousands of women is only $10,000. So, you know, talk about donating something in a hospital in the United States of America. You can't really donate a clinic like that for it takes 100 times that kind of money, maybe more. Also, I'd like to mention that we do have a Facebook page, Cure Cervical Cancer on Facebook. It would be wonderful for you just to join our Facebook page, and then you'll automatically get our blogs and emails.
Excellent. Thank you for that information. So we've come to the end of our show. Dr. Patricia Gordon, Dr. Jennifer Lang, thank you so much for your fascinating discussion today. Your passion, dedication, and work are truly inspiring, and we thank you for educating us and raising awareness about this important public health problem and really saving the lives of women around the world. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. And Dr. Gordon, we wish you a safe trip to Japan and good luck with your work. So,
thank you. We leave tomorrow afternoon. Thank you.
Wonderful. Have a safe trip. So to our listeners, as always, you can help shape our program by submitting your comments and suggestions through info@peoplepeople.org or P2P's Facebook page. Remember, if you are unable to tune in live, you can access the archive show using the link on the People to People website. Okay, thanks again to our guests, and have a good night to all our listeners.